This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And this half hour is brought to you by Larson & Larson. They are my intellectual property lawyers, and they should be yours, because all of you writers out there, protect yourself. Make sure not just that you have your copyright, but if you have interesting characters, you might even think about trademarking some of these characters. So I am so excited today. I have in the studio with me three guests. I love having guests in the studio. And they are, first of all, Bria Burton, who was here before. She's been here a couple of times. And I'm so excited to have her back, because one of the projects that she is involved in is called the Alvarium Experiment. Hi, Bria.
Hi, Patsy. Thanks for having me.
Okay. And, of course, Charles Cornell, Charles A. Cornell. We have to say that there's a couple of Charles Cornells out there. Charles A. Cornell is also with us. And you've also been involved in the Alvarium experiment. So, and welcome, Charles.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
Okay. It's nice to see you again. And you brought me in a copy of your book, The Dragonfly. And this is exciting. I'm so grateful to you for that. And a new guest, we've never had him in the studio before, John Hope. And John is here, and he's brought also a nice little edition of one of his stories, which appears in a new anthology called The Masters Reimagined, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. Wow, Bria, it's nice to see you.
Thank you. You as well.
Okay. Well, let's start so that we can go to the other guys, and let's talk about The Masters Reimagined first. This is a fascinating idea.
Yes. So this is actually our third Alvarium experiment project. So we have been collaborating now for, this is our third project. And the idea, I don't recall who had the idea from our group, but was to take classic literature and essentially reimagine, reinvent, take characters from those classic stories and put them in a speculative fiction environment, whether it be fantasy, science fiction, horror, any type of speculative element to the story. And we all kind of took our ideas and ran with it. So, for example, my story I took from Alice in Wonderland and The Count of Monte Cristo. I actually did a little bit of a mashup. John's story was from the Book of Jonah in the Bible. Charles was actually our cover artist this time. He did not contribute a story, but he did excellent cover art as always. And someone else did The Jungle Book by Kipling. Someone else did Moby Dick by Herman Melville.
And Ken Pelham did Dubliners.
He did Shakespeare's Macbeth.
Oh, he did Shakespeare's Macbeth this time.
Yeah, so incredible, incredible, you know, stories from these wonderful classic tales, and they are all so fascinating. So it was a lot of fun.
Let's talk a little bit to John. John, tell us, so you took your story from the Bible.
Yep.
And what is the story?
It's about a character by the name of Pupac, who is forced to help out the Brazilian government because the country Brazil is being essentially I don't even know what my story's about.
A lot of people being overcome with some problem.
Sorry.
It's real easy because you just say Brazil, and Brazil is overcome with problems constantly. So yeah. We don't have to worry about that.
Well, this particular problem is malaria. They discovered that one of the native tribes are actually have an immunity toward malaria, and Pupac is one of the members of that tribe, but he doesn't want to help out them because the people of Brazil have been cutting down the rainforest and killing off his tribe members.
And that's true.
Right. Yeah, so this touches upon some realities. In fact, Pupac is actually the name of a real-life native who his tribe is actually down to only five people. And he's been well-recognized and almost been a spokesperson for his people.
Wow. This sounds like an exciting story. The kind of story I will really enjoy because I'm very interested in this entire, to tell you this entire mess down there in South America with the rainforest and the absolute stupidity of some of the governments and some of the associations that are trying to fix the problems, and sometimes they make it worse. So it's going to be a great story to read. Now, you tell me that you've written 20 books?
I'd like to. I'd like to write a lot more than that. Right now, I have 12 published books.
Uh-huh.
And about 30 short stories published. I've, of course, written a lot more of each because that's what you have to do as a writer. You just keep on writing. And I mainly write for young adult and middle grade fiction because I still think like a middle schooler. And I have similar sense of humor.
Well, okay. Well, that's important because we need to encourage young people to read. So the more good writers out there who touch that middle grade area, I think it's such an important area. And it's a very popular area now. I'm very happy to report that I've been talking to quite a few literary agents, and they are always looking for really good young adult and middle grade writers because it's a field that they're getting some good traction in. Now, how did you get involved with sci-fi? Have you always been interested in sci-fi?
Not particularly. I actually usually don't. I like reading it. and mainly because there seems to be a lot of bad sci-fi out there.
Okay. Well.
So I essentially zone into really good sci-fi. Ray Bradbury is probably one of my favorite authors, and but he's actually written a lot more than just sci-fi, even though that's what he's known for. I like writing just about any story as long as it's good, and that's actually why I like writing young adult and middle grade fiction, because both of those aren't really genres in itself. They kind of cross lots of different types of stories. So as long as you have story of a kid that's going through some sort of trouble, then you can essentially put him in any situation.
And run with it.
Yeah.
That's the fun part. Now, Bria, of course, you tell us, let's go back a step and tell us a little bit about the entire experiment.
Sure. Yes. In fact, the Alvarium Experiment is a consortium of authors. So award-winning authors, accomplished authors who are working together on these collaborations. So we affectionately label ourselves the Hive. The Alvarium is Latin for hive. And so we kind of, like worker bees, we're in this together, and we all contribute different aspects, not only of the story, but we work on getting these anthologies put together. Our initial project was the Prometheus Saga, and we came and talked about a year ago about that. And we just had such a blast. We decided to keep going. And it started with single Kindle editions of our short stories. So that was kind of a unique way to launch an anthology. And so the collection came out with each short story available for 99 cents in the Kindle store. And to this day, you can still purchase those single stories from each of our anthologies by themselves, if you just want to test out the waters and see what the stories are about. And then we did come up with a collected anthology that is in print and an ebook, that a beautiful cover by Charles Cornell. And so the Prometheus Saga is available on Amazon, and then in ebook form, it's available pretty much in all the avenues, Kobo, Nook, Kindle,
and it
all
is
that.
A beautiful cover.
Mm-hmm.
Charles, I love it. Let's talk a little to Charles, because Charles, I think the cover of what the first time I saw the cover for Prometheus Saga, I said, wow, that is a fantastic cover.
Yes. I mean, this is just my little contribution to the project. And I think the other thing to mention is I do the covers for the individual stories. So I've done 30 covers now. I shouldn't say that. There was two that I didn't do. One author wanted to have her cover artist do hers, but I did all the covers for the latest one, Masters Reimagined, which was really a lot of fun. But the other thing I think we need to mention, too, is we also edit each other's works. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things the readers can get from this is a very high quality of craft. And we're brutal with each other. I'm the worst editor. John knows because I edited his story and a few others there. But I mean, we don't hold any bars back. We just, you know, it's very, very important for us. The quality of the writing is very important. So the readers will know that they're getting it really not only from an author that's already gone through publishing, but also that we've taken great care in the way in which we've crafted these stories. So I have to say that the reason I didn't participate in the latest anthology, other than doing the cover art, is that I moved down to Florida and full time from Michigan.
Finally,
that's right.
Yes.
Finally, yes. After commuting to my little condo, we decided to buy a house and move permanently. So that's where I am, and I absolutely love it here. It is fantastic. And so that move was very busy. And I also had a couple of other things in the mill, a couple of new works that that I can just briefly mention.
Oh, yeah. Mention them because these sound exciting. Yeah. I can tell you. The minute I saw the titles and read the premise, I thought, whoa. Now, we should give it a little background because, you know, I'm from Michigan.
Yeah.
And so it's so wonderful always to have somebody who's been living in Michigan, knows Michigan. And you were in the
I was in the automotive industry.
In the automotive industry, so this gives you a little background. I'm from Highland Park, Michigan, which was the
headquarters sort of village, of Chrysler.
Right?
It used to be.
Exactly. That we were the city where all of the workers for all the automobile companies, we were located there. And so we were all involved in those days, of course, in the automobile business. Then it went down. Now maybe some of it will come back. But so there you are, a businessman, a serious businessman, all the time writing, I think, on the side and living this other life. And now that you're down here in Florida, you can live this full life of being a writer. So tell us about these two new books.
Okay. Yes. And these are going to be what I would call counterculture books. These are something that you are not going to find, I promise, you're not going to find anywhere else. I spent 39 years in the same company, one of the big three automakers. And I saw through those 39 years, essentially the entire spectrum of dysfunctional behavior and just the general chaos of office work and production work. And so I've written two books. The first book is called A Survivor's Guide to Working at a Big Corporation. And it is what I found before I retired after 39 years. I found that there were younger people. We actually started hiring in the auto industry again after not hiring for like 20 years. And all these young people would be coming in and I would be telling them these little anecdotes and stories, because I am a storyteller. And they would like, their eyes would just widen. And I thought to myself, these are things that I learned when I was their age, you know, in my 20s, my first job. And so I thought, hey, there must be some universal truth behind what I'm saying. So I started to explore that. And so in A Survivor's Guide to Working in a Big Corporation, what you're going to see is a complete insider's view of corporate culture. I'm going to strip down all of the propaganda, all of the cultural norms that the corporation wants you to believe and get in behind and get underneath and, you know, get all the little dirt that's under the rug. Yeah, it's all there. I talk about things like how to work, how to survive. It's not about how to thrive. There's thousands of books out there about how to thrive, how to be the best manager, how to delegate, how to climb the corporate ladder. This is about survival. This is about going through the downsizings, the reorganizations, working for managers who are sociopaths, narcissists, Machiavellians, obsessive compulsive, all of those kinds of things, and surviving them, and gives you actual specific tips. Like, this is what you do and what you don't do to survive these kinds of people.
So you're saying that on occasion you have worked for a few sociopaths.
All of them. And I did. So I was writing them. So yes, I have worked for sociopathic managers. I worked for a narcissist who had a department of three people, and he was so thrilled about what he was doing and who he was that he actually created a logo and ball caps for a department of three people. That's how narcissistic he was. And then the second book, so that's a nonfiction book. It's basically a self-help book for those people who are stuck inside those big glass rabbit hutches that we drive by in the big city. And the second book is called Harvey Drinkwater and the Cult of Savings. Now, Harvey was written in 2003. And it was written, and I knew that I could not publish it until after I retired.
And got his pension?
I got my, and cashed my pension out so that nobody can cut me off. In neither book or in my biography will you know where I worked. I don't tell you what company I worked for. But the people that I worked with and the people in the industry, in the automotive industry particularly, will know Harvey Drinkwater and the Cult of Savings, will know exactly what's going on. Because what I did was I got a couple of glasses of wine and I drank those first,
okay.
Kept on going. I thought to myself, I'm going to think like a total idiot. Because sometimes a big corporation, an idiot could run this place better than what is being run. And from that premise, I developed Harvey Drinkwater, my idiot. And he stumbles into this big corporation. They're building this big skyscraper in this fictitious town called Ocean City, Oregon. And they're the biggest corporation in the world. And their products, nobody really knows what they do. They're just like the Enron of my fictional world, where it's all just derivatives and everything else. And so he stumbles in there and by accident ends up getting employed. And from that point forward, no matter how many dumb, wacky, crazy, stupid things he does, he impresses people and gets promoted. And eventually, at the end of the book, I'll tell you the ending, he becomes the CEO. So his journey from complete idiot, unemployed, to being the CEO is what Harvey Drinkwater and the Cult of Savings is all about. The Cult of Savings refers to purchasing. He starts off in purchasing, but he ends up being the CEO.
Oh, this sounds like a fun book. Not only does it sound like a fun book, it sounds like a fun book that's, you know, maybe somebody will pick up and make a movie, because this is going to be a riot.
Crazy, crazy characters. We've got Todd Hurdle, who's a total maniacal buzzsaw of a busyness person. We have Angus McCallywag, who's purchasing manager, who's Scottish. I make fun of absolutely everybody. I take every possible stereotype and put them in there. I've got the Scot. I've got Chinese. I've got Arab. I've got everybody in there, all doing crazy, crazy things, because we're all part of the human race, and it doesn't matter who we are and where we come from. We do crazy things, and when we're part of a big corporation, it just seems to get crazier.
Don't let Charles's smooth voice and sophistication fool you. He has a very dark sense of humor that we all love.
And I have a feeling, especially after a few glasses of wine. Okay, that sounds great. It sounds exciting. Now, I'm going to take a quick commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to go back to Bria, because Bria is, well, not just Bria. Bria is another person. So she's like two people in one. Oh, well, three people at the moment. Okay, we'll be right back.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow, and like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you could move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry my pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose.
Mike is offering 50% off his 4-pack special.
Go to MyPillow.com or call 1-800-871-1543 and use the promo code PATSY, and Mike will offer you free shipping. Once again, that's 800-871-1543, promo code PATSY, P-A-T-Z-I.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my guests in the studio, John Hope, Charles A. Cornell, and Bria Burton. And Bria Burton, who is also another person right now. How we, and she's carrying another person. So we're this is a full studio here. I mean, we're jam-packed here.
Speaking of speculative fiction, I'm sure the audience is thinking, like, how can she possibly, what's going on?
Yes, well, we are in another universe. We're you know, this studio, as a matter of fact, we could maybe conjure up something. It all go back in time or something, or go forward in time. Wouldn't that be fun?
Oh, yeah. We come up with a lot of great ideas to get new anthologies, so keep those ideas flowing.
Okay, we will. Yeah, why not? Send one right here in the studio with me, and I can be a character in one of your stories. Uh-huh. You know, Patsy with a Z is an unusual name. Mm-hmm, you mm-hmm. do not see that. I've not seen that before. So you can use me.
Okay.
Now, Bria, tell me, who are you today?
Well, it's funny you bring that up, because the thing that I've been trying to do for quite a few years is come up with a pen name. And I finally came up with one for my epic fantasy trilogy, which I'm in the midst of writing. The first book is complete and in the process of being sent to agents and publishers. I did have one agent with interest, but eventually they did send a rejection. But it's all part of the process.
Oh, yes.
And so this fantasy trilogy that I've been writing is called Levinity. And I did want to separate that specific series from the rest of my writing. Most of my writing is standalone, except that. So I came up with a pen name just this week, and it is Shayla Cole. And so I've essentially launched Shayla Cole's website. It's shaylacole.com. I was so fortunate that was available, the domain name.
Well, the spelling is S-H-A-Y-L-A, mm-hmm. so that's unusual.
Right.
And so that got you the website.
Right. I think that was the first name that really did it. The last name, the significance is my middle name is Nicole. So that's where I came up with Cole. And so I've now got my pen name. So two in one. So the third person in the room would be that I am expecting.
Okay.
So November 30th, I will be welcoming my first child. So
okay. Well, and then you have to come up now. Now that you know the importance of a writer's name,
right.
You'll have to come up with something really good.
I think this is what really helped push me over the edge, was getting a name, was looking up a lot of baby names. We've got a lot of ideas flowing.
Shayla's a nice name.
It is, yeah.
Was it in the baby name list?
It was somewhere, I'm sure, that I saw it in the midst of searching. So we're having a boy, so then I thought, oh, I can just run with whatever I want for my pen name. I don't have to worry about stealing it from my child's name.
But I think it's a great name.
Thank you.
It's going to conjure fantasy world.
It does. It does. Yes. Yeah. And when I Googled the meaning, it said in Irish Gaelic, it means fairy palace. And I have fairies in the fantasy series. So
that's perfect.
Yeah. Very fitting.
Exactly. Now, with your sci-fi life, when did you get involved with sci-fi?
I've been writing since I was young. So I generally tend to write speculative, whether it be fantasy, science fiction elements, since I was a kid. The first story I ever was paid for the publication from a magazine was a science fiction story. And that was in the Colored Lens. I believe it was autumn 2014 issue. And that story was actually a dream, of all things, that sparked a lot of ideas of, oh, I feel like I just dreamt a whole story and now I just need to tie in some things to make it actually make sense. And so it started certainly for me at a young age, and then I've continued to enjoy particularly short stories for science fiction. And for whatever reason, this fantasy series just kind of kept going. And for the most part, when I'm writing sci-fi, I find that I seem very tied to the short story form, with science fiction in particular. And then when Charles and Ken, so Ken Pelham was a visitor on the show the last time Charles and I were here, Ken and Charles had invited me to be part of the Alvarium Experiment, which was going to launch stories with science fiction elements. And I went, I want to sign up. I'd love to. And so now that we've had the Prometheus saga come out, our next anthology, we came up with another science fiction premise, And the idea was, what if extraterrestrials coming to Earth were actually human, and the first extraterrestrial encounter turned out to be humans returning to Earth? So that was our more broad premise that we came up with for the second anthology. So Return to Earth, the title. And the majority of the authors were from the Prometheus saga, but a few went ahead and stepped down. So that's where we got John Hope joining us for Return to Earth, and a couple of the other authors that hadn't been in the initial project joined the hive, became part of the beehive, and we again had a blast. And we had our format from essentially learning how to make it all work with the Prometheus saga. It seemed to go very quickly, very smoothly, because we had done it once and we were ready to do it again by launching those individual stories. And very much Return to Earth is pretty hard science fiction. Prometheus saga was a little bit softer in the sense of it was spanning the history of the world. So all of our stories set in different historical time periods. A lot of times they could feel a little bit more perhaps mystery feel or fantasy feel, with maybe that little bit of science fiction tagged in there without being as predominant. But in Return to Earth, very predominant, with the, of course, extraterrestrial, in terms of most of the stories have a very science fiction feel. So my story in Return to Earth is called AOB, and it's about an artificial intelligence who is essentially trying to help an alien who has come to Earth and trying to repopulate her planet, which is dying. So it's not a romance, which it might sound like that, but it was a lot of fun to write. So
okay, this sounds fascinating. Now, John, what is your story in the Return to Earth?
Yeah, it's about a astronaut who is tasked to do some exploration of Mars. In his journey to Mars, he ends up getting sucked into a wormhole and is brought back in time. And he ends up meeting his mother and himself. And in the end, he ends up being a dad to himself.
Okay, that sounds interesting. And what about you, Charles?
Yeah, my story is called Children of the Stars. And it's about a medical researcher in America who goes to Japan and meets one of his colleagues. And what they've discovered independently is that they have found some women who are extremely old. They're about 80 years old, but they look like they're 20. And they are prolific at reproducing. Uh-huh. And they give birth twice a year, and each birth is twins. So over the period of 60 years, they give birth to 240 children each. And so this phenomena is explored, and it's set mainly in Japan, and it's written like a thriller, where the one medical researcher is exposed to radiation, is dying, and the story is told about his escape from this village where this particular Japanese woman is. The term is Hoshiko, which is Japanese for children of the stars. And it relates also to, it was inspired by a story that's gone around the internet quite a bit with absolutely no resolution, about a freighter in 1948, which was discovered in distress, had sent distress signals. And when the people boarded it, all of the people on board were dead. They were all looking up at the sky, with some of them with their fingers pointed to the sky. And there was one known survivor of that incident. And so what I've done is I've actually had two survivors, and the second survivor is this Japanese 80-year-old woman. So what I'm trying to do is connect the mystery of the disappearance of the Orang Medan in 1948 to modern-day Japan. And I have been so inspired by this story that I'm actually starting next year, I'm starting a series, and I've actually planned six novels in the Children of the Stars series.
Wow. So you get inspiration from your ideas, yeah. and then you run with it. This sounds fascinating. And Japan needs this. They need some women who produce a lot of children, because they're running out of people.
That's right.
So you never know. Maybe
although I'm not sure these kinds of people are the ones that they want. And I won't reveal why.
Okay, well, that sounds nice. Yeah, Oh, gosh. So humans who come back to Earth and find humans. I maybe we're not the humans. Who knows what we are? You sometimes start wondering, you know. You read the news and you say, are we all crazy? Maybe we're all crazy. And it would be nice if there were humans who left at one time. They were normal and they come back and they find us and they say, gosh, you're all crazy. What are you doing here?
I hate to tell you, but you're surrounded by crazy people. We write down our craziness.
Yeah, that's true.
It's all part of being a writer.
But you make it interesting, so that's part of the fun of it.
Yeah, so Return to Earth is also, again, the single Kindle stories available for 99 cents each, and then the collected anthology we put together, just like the Prometheus Saga, a beautiful cover yet again by Charles, and the ebook of the full anthology will actually be coming out, we think, in about a month or so. So we'll also have the ebook edition of the collected works. So and the there is a website, if I could share
that. Yes, please.
So the website specifically for Return to Earth is alvariumexperiment.wixsite.com/returntoearth. And that is where you can find all the stories and all the details about where to purchase.
And you have some events personally coming up that you're a book signing. What's coming up for you?
I do have a couple things coming up. So tomorrow, Tampa Bay Comic Con kicks off, and I am going to be part of a writing panel called Writers Unite. And so that tomorrow evening, so that would be Friday, July 28th at 4:30 p.m. at Tampa Bay Comic Con in room 22. And there's a panel of three authors plus the moderator's also an author. And the idea is talking all the way from first stages of writing to editing to publishing and marketing and beyond. So we'll be kind of spanning
now,
the spectrum.
Comic-Con is an annual event.
Yes, so I believe that, this will be my first time going to the Tampa Bay Comic-Con, so I believe they do have it every year, yes, and they've got a lot of big names there. I think just looking at the website, they've got, like, Kate Beckinsale will be there, and Wallace Shawn, if you remember him from Princess Bride, and Val Kilmer, I believe, will be there. So a lot of big names show up to the Comic-Con events, and they have their own book signing or their own, you know, personal autographing days and times that you can look up on their site. So the throughout the entire weekend is the whole event, and they have different panels, different things you can attend. So the Writers Unite panel that I happen to be on will just be focused on writing.
So what, as a group, do you get together and do some of these events, some of these book conventions, book expos? Have you ever done, like, the BEA, any of the big book events yet?
I have not. No, I don't know about John and Charles. But for the Alvarium Experiment, we've done more local events with the Florida Writers Association, for example. Several of the Alvarium Experiment authors were at a recent mini conference, a one-day conference down in Fort Myers, and we were all speakers at that conference and had a great time down there. So more local stuff in terms of trying to get together with Alvarium authors, and then me personally. This will be the biggest that I've ever been to is tomorrow at Tampa Bay Comic Con.
Have you broken into the library? Are you carried in libraries yet?
So, no, I have not. Yep, not yet.
Mm-hmm. Okay, because that is a big area. Mm-hmm. If you can break into the library world, it is a wonderful thing. Mm-hmm. And because librarians spend like $1.8 billion
right.
a year on
yes,
books.
Yes, yes.
And I think your stories are so good that it would really...
I mean, it can't hurt to ask, right?
That's it. It doesn't hurt. And as a matter of fact, another way for you to really expand your horizons is to try to get if you can find a bunch or a group of librarians who are interested in the books. Now, right now, they're published in soft paperback versions,
right. Mm-hmm.
But if you get enough interest, you might be able to find a publisher who will publish them in hardback version for you to have them carried in libraries. Because I think the stories are wonderful. For example, I loved with the stories, the Prometheus Saga, where you went to different different time periods.
Right.
I think that was so fascinating. I know you went, of course, into the American, the Revolutionary War, your story. Charles?
1938.
1938 Berlin. And so it's just, I think from this point of view, the stories are so fascinating mm-hmm. that any reader would really enjoy them. And I'm yeah. hoping that maybe we can open some doors. I have a few connections, too, that I want to talk to you about.
Wonderful.
Because I think the library should have these books. These are great books, and they're lots of fun to read. And I think they will find a wide readership if you can get into them. But have you the thing again with promoting books is that you do have to get out there and do these events,
right?
Mm-hmm. Not just in our area, but try to get to some of the national.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In fact, one of the things that you're kind of applying is, do we do things together? And Bree mentioned a couple events, but to be honest, I mean, we're all independent authors, and we very actively go to event after event after event, reaching out to our audience as much as possible. And for example, since I write a lot of middle grade fiction and young adult, I visit schools on a regular basis, from elementary, middle school, high schools, and I speak to students about writing and about the whole authorship world. And I'm sure, Charles does, his own kind of circuits of places that he goes to as well.
Well, the key is to try to get out there as much as possible. That's, mm-hmm. you have to get known.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Because we want to bring readers in to really enjoy these books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just mentioning that in October 14th, the first event, first time, they're doing a Southwest Florida writer's showcase in a one-day showcase in Fort Myers that I'll be speaking at. I'll be the keynote speaker on steampunk and retropunk. In fact, I'm writing steampunk now, and I go in costume. So when we talk about Comic-Con and cosplay.
I love yes. steampunk
and costumes. So if you go to my website, charlesacornell.com, you'll see me in my steampunk/dieselpunk costume, which I call Generalissimo Diesel. And I'm writing steampunk right now, so I'm hoping that by October 14th, I'll have published my first couple of novellas and short stories. I'm writing one called The Incredible Clockwork Elephant, and I'm writing one called The Clockwork Explorer. And Clockwork Elephant is, I'm hoping to be a YA-oriented novella about a young man who develops this clockwork elephant, and it's taken to India, and it goes on a tour of India. And gets into all kinds of adventures. And then Clockwork Explorer, which is what you can do with these punk fictions, is that you can they can be in the past, or sort of a Victorian era kind of mashup, or they can be in the future. And Clockwork Explorer is going to be about 1,000 years in the future, about a world that has only two layers. There's the place you live below the smog, and there's the place you live above it. And the whole world is just completely encircled by a dusty smog that is continually moved by the jet stream. And so there's airships above, and there's a, sort of a dystopian, apocalyptic world below. And it's called the Clockwork Explorer. That's going to be coming out very soon this year.
Ooh, that sounds good.
But there's still Waffle Houses everywhere.
we need that. We have to have Waffle Houses. Okay, well, I'm going to have to take a short break. But we're going to have a commercial, then we're going to have a book buzz moment, and then after the book buzz moment, we'll be back.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest from Book Buzz. From John Grisham, one of America's best-selling authors, comes one of his most electrifying novels, a high-stakes thrill ride through the darkest corners of the Sunshine State. Hey, what happens when a judge bends the law or takes a bribe? Lazy Stoltz is an investigator for the Florida Board on Judicial Conduct. She is a lawyer, not a cop. And it's her job to respond to complaints, not corruption. But a corruption case lands on her desk. A previously disbarred lawyer claims to know of a Florida judge who has stolen more money than all the crooked judges combined. Wow. And not just crooked judges in Florida. All judges from all states. He wants to put a stop to it. His only client is a person who knows the truth and wants to blow the whistle and, of course, collect millions under Florida law. He files a complaint and the case is assigned to Lacey, who immediately suspects that this one could be dangerous. Dangerous is one thing, deadly is something else. John Grisham's The Whistler involves the rich and powerful and abuse of the justice system. Grab this elaborate conspiracy today. This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper. For more of my suggestions on the mysteries you should not miss, go to our webpage, www.radio-joyonpaper.com, and click on Book Buzz. That's radio-joyonpaper. Rita Moreau, buzzing off for now.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am back here in the studio with my three guests, John Hope, Charles A. Cornell, and Bria Burton. And we've been talking about their wonderful stories in sci-fi. Charles is branching out into steampunk. I love steampunk. And John, of course, is writing for middle grade students. And what were you showing me here, John? What do you have?
I have a card game with chips that you can compete with other people. It's very popular with middle school and later elementary school, and it goes along with my more recent book, Silence and Sharks. It's about a kid who learns how to talk to sharks, even though he's deaf, and he has to save him from a bunch of fishermen that are killing him off for shark fin soup. It's actually one of my more ambitious story premises because it's kind of like a flipper with sharks, but it's pretty exciting adventure. I like writing adventure stories, and this kind of falls right into that, but it has quite a detailed premise to it.
Well, this is, John has just handed me this book. It's called Silencing Sharks, and the cover is absolutely beautiful. It's gorgeous. Who did this cover for you?
A gentleman by the name of Alex McArdell. He lives in England. And he actually does a lot of advertising photographs. When I asked him to illustrate that, he thought it was strange because he'd never illustrated a cover of a book before. But I really liked his – he kind of has a darker style to it, to a lot of his artwork. And he uses computer 3D graphics in order to render his images. And I had a very definite image of what I wanted on the cover, kid swimming with a shark holding onto his fin. And unfortunately, you can't really find photos of that.
No, not too many kids do that.
Right, so I knew I had to get it illustrated.
And including the famous race with a shark. He didn't actually have a real shark.
Oh. Yeah.
Oh. So you developed also the card game for it?
Yeah, the card game, which has a collection of about 50 different sharks, and it has stats on each one of them. And in playing the game, you compete with other people who have other shark cards, and you win shark teeth.
Wow, I like that. That's very clever. Very clever. Yeah. And so I can see that if they buy it on Amazon, do they get the cards? Can they buy the cards too?
Yeah, yeah. You can either get the book or the cards or both. Uh-huh. And, of course, a little cheaper if you get them both.
Okay. And is someone in town carrying this book in the bookstore with the cards?
Not in town. The only bookstore that's carrying this right now is in Fort Myers, believe it or not. But I've been trying to shop.
Are they carrying it at the aquarium here in the Clearwater Aquarium?
Not quite yet. Like I said, this is a brand new book. So,
well, I think this book should be at the Clearwater Aquarium.
Okay.
Well. That's my opinion. It should be there. It's a perfect book. It's beautiful. The cover's beautiful. The story's ideal. And having this combination of a card game, I think, is a terrific idea. And I think sold as a package at the Clearwater Aquarium, you're going to have some good sales because people love the Clearwater Aquarium. So that's your next step. Don't do anything else.
Okay.
When you leave here, you know, we're
go straight to the aquarium.
We're 15 minutes away from the aquarium.
Yeah.
And show them that, and I believe they'll carry it.
Yeah, I love that aquarium. I actually used to want to be a marine biologist when I was a kid. That was my first choice, which was weird, you know, saying that as a second grader, because my peers are like, yeah, I want to be a fireman or I want to be a police officer. And I'd say, I want to be a marine biologist. And they'd look at me and go, what's a marine biologist? And say, well, it's like that guy that swims with sharks. And then they say, John, you're crazy.
Well, I think that you should definitely go there. I know my boys love the aquarium when they were young. One of my sons actually did the dolphin thing of feeding, you know, going jumping in and feeding the dolphins and working with the dolphins. So it's a fascinating place. They do wonderful work promoting. And of course, here you're talking about in this book, there are idiots who are killing sharks for their fins.
Yes.
You know, talking about humans coming back from someplace to find humans on Earth, you hope that the humans who come back are more intelligent than the humans on Earth. Because why anyone in their right mind would want to kill a shark just to get the fin? It's incomprehensible.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, what it comes down to is money. You know, I mean, that's the real evil, and that's the evil in this book.
Well, it comes down to the stupid person who eats that soup. I mean, I don't care how good it tastes. You know, get some Campbell's tomato soup. That's as good as you can get. And forget this stupid shark fin soup. It's idiotic. You know, you just want to grab these people and bang their heads together and say, you're not human. Maybe you are from some crazy alien planet where they eat shark fins. But anyway, you have to go to the aquarium, okay?
Yes, ma'am.
Absolutely. I'm ordering you right there because I think it's a kind of story. I assume, of course, that it is anti-shark fin soup, right?
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, you are not encouraging people to.
No, yeah.
That's
the villain.
Exactly. Shark fin soup is disgusting. Anybody out there who has ever wanted to taste it, I'll tell you right now, it's disgusting. I haven't tasted it because I wouldn't taste it, but I'm sure it tastes like garbage. So don't do it. And John Hope is going to put his book there over there at the aquarium with a card game. I think that's a delightful idea. Kids love that.
And the setting of this book is actually in St. Pete Beach.
Oh, my goodness. My goodness. My goodness.
Yeah.
Also, take this book. I'm telling you right now, this kind of book, especially when you have the ancillary products that go with it, which, of course, what you have to do is you'll need a hat. You need a T-shirt. My goodness, you have here, Mark. We're talking marketing potential here, of enormous potential here. Not only they should have it at the Don Cesar Hotel, they should have it on all of the – you just go up the beach, up and down the beach, and go to all of the big, you know, tourist places. They have to carry your book. They have to carry your cards. They have to carry your T-shirts and your hats. You have a product here.
All right.
That's it. I'm telling you, I want to see this everywhere in the next few months. Yeah, okay?
And you seem pretty angry about it, so I'll definitely...
Yeah. I'll be angry if you don't, because I want you to stop people from getting shark fin soup. And the more people who are aware of the problem, because sometimes people aren't aware. They say, oh, well, really? Yeah, it's not so bad. Yeah, it's bad. They're killing these sharks for no reason. It's disgusting. Yeah. You have to, you're going to get working on that.
And you know, and they're apex predators. So, I mean, you take off the top of the pyramid and everything's going to.
Yeah, everything goes. Gonna, I mean, it's, yeah. It's crazy. I was just talking, interviewed somebody about the whole mess in Africa of killing animals. In one area, they killed 16,000 elephants. 16,000 elephants? I mean, think of that. 16,000 elephants dead for what? So somebody can have... what are they doing with this stupid ivory? Who cares if you have real ivory? Nobody even has pianos anymore. So what do you need ivory keys for? You know, what do you need ivory anything for? It's stupid. We have to find some... You have to do some premise about, you know, getting rid of these stupid people. Anyway, I get really enthused about something like this, especially I love marketing ideas. I'm always trying, and I hope that I can help all of you writers with marketing ideas, because it is important to get your books out there and to meet readers and to get readers to read your books. Mm-hmm. So I'm so happy that all three of you came in today. And let's go around one more time, and you just tell where people can get your books and like your website and that type of thing.
Oh, sure. So Bria here again, and my website is www.briaburton.com. And that website has links to everything, my Facebook fan page, my Twitter, and connections to the new website for Shayla Cole, my Livinity series pen name.
Okay, perfect. Yeah.
John Hope. Yeah, my website is johnhopewriting.com. And you can get all my books and short stories, ebooks, and if you happen to be a teacher and you want me to come visit your school, you can contact me through there.
Okay, that sounds good. Yeah, all you teachers out there, keep him busy. Okay, and Charles.
Yes, and mine is www.charlesacornell.com, and it's been completely redesigned over the last couple of weeks, and I have little portals, and I've got five little portals to go into my work. I have thrillers, science fiction, diesel punk, steampunk, and humor. And so if you're interested in my newest book, Harvey Drinkwater and the Cult of Savings, you click on the little humor icon and it'll take you into a whole new world.
Okay. Well, I think that's fantastic, all of you. You're all so talented. And I hope that all of your books sell very well. And I have a feeling with Charles, we have in the future, we have a very, very funny movie, because I'll tell you something. It's the kind of book that I would love to do a script for. And so I hope that we see you at the movies and we'll all be at the premiere, right?
Yes, of course.
Okay.
And if I could mention, yes, the Alvarium Experiment has a Facebook fan page. So if you go to Facebook and just type in Alvarium Experiment, you will find our page and you can go on there, like it, and you'll see all about all our projects.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. And I'll have you all back at some point or in the future. Okay. In the real future, in the past future, in the future future, whatever. We're going to have you back. Okay?
Sounds great.
Okay. Bye for now. Okay, that was wonderful. I'm so happy that everyone joined me today. And just, I want to say thank you to Big Ed for being so good to me and so helpful. And everyone, just find your joy and share it and be happy today and every day. And don't, absolutely do not eat shark fin soup. Bye-bye.